Get them in and do it soon. The horticulture and wine industries are welcoming a government announcement of more seasonal workers from the Pacific, but say the unpredictability of COVID makes it prudent to move quickly. From next month, RSE workers from Samoa, Tonga and Vanuatu will be allowed into New Zealand without the need to undergo managed isolation. They will need to have a pre-departure COVID test and another once they arrive. Like many industries, horticulture and viticulture have been concerned at the impact of ongoing labour shortages. There's currently only half the 14,400 RSC workers in the country. I'll discuss what the announcement means for growers with Kate Hellstrom, CEO of Summer Fruit NZ, and James Dicey, an Otago-based viticulturalist and director of Great Vision, a company that helps people develop and run vineyards. Kate, good morning. I'll start with you. A few details, of course, yet to be ironed out. This was just announced yesterday. But what don't we know about how the return of RSE workers will be managed?
So we're working very closely with officials and Minister Farfoy at the moment. There's a core group of chief executives who've been working with the minister and his officials throughout COVID on this RSE issue. So we're looking at the logistics at the moment, and we have a plan to come back to RSE employers with in due course.
Has there been discussion over vaccination?
So there's been government-to-government conversations led by MFAT around repatriation requirements for Samoa and the other countries in terms of the workers when they return home. We need to work with the government around what requirements are needed for the influx of the RSE workers as they come in from September onwards.
Would it be reasonable to at least ensure they were vaccinated before they went back home after their time in New Zealand, given our nations are at the moment very safe, but we don't know what the future holds?
Absolutely. This is something that's critical. Of course, you know, human health comes first for us and for our Pacific nation partners. We will want to do everything we can do to ensure and work with both our government and RSE home countries to ensure that COVID doesn't spread around the Pacific, and that would be a number one concern for us. So current RSE workers who are here now are required to be vaccinated before they return home, and of course the details of that, how that would happen, etc., we're working through.
You mentioned that you've been liaising with Mr. Farfoy, the Immigration Minister. Did you have an inkling before yesterday's announcement, you can tell us, that this was going to be announced, a decision had been made?
We've worked really constructively with immigration officials and Minister Farfoy. You know, we've throughout the time he's asked us about in terms of, you know, what are our labour shortages, and you know, of course within the government settings we understand the restrictions, but we did get a heads up last week about this possibility, so we were asked to give assurances around what we would, you know, in terms of the logistics and our plan for getting RSE workers in. But that's been an ongoing conversation that we've been having over months.
There is an argument from some growers that we've heard that because of COVID's unpredictability, it would be a really good idea to get as many RSE workers in as quickly as possible. Does that sound like a good idea to you? And if so, is it likely to happen?
Yeah, it sounds like a great idea to us. As the group who's been working on in terms of the industry bodies, we're all represented in this group. We want to get as many RSE workers in as quickly as possible in case anything does happen in the Pacific. You know, Fiji, we look at that as an example of what can go badly wrong. So we, of course, within these government conversations in terms of what's possible, but from our side, we're working with airlines, looking at charter options, working with the RSE communities back in those countries to ensure that we can fill flights quickly and get them in safely, according to the plan that we're working through at the moment.
A shame though, perhaps, Kate, that we're not, as a nation, more fully vaccinated than we are now. That would be a bit more reassuring for them, don't you think?
Well, these countries, of course, they haven't had any community outbreaks, so of course they'd be very concerned about their own community returning home without having been vaccinated. Of course, that's something that we would all be concerned about as New Zealanders, so we're waiting for that to happen.
Do you think there will be a lot of workers putting their hands up for this from those eligible countries?
Absolutely. Everyone's been under extreme pressure in the horticulture and viticulture industries. In terms of our first option is always to employ New Zealanders, and there's been huge effort going into that around New Zealand by industry groups. But it's just in some of our industries, for me it's summer fruit, we have a peak picking time where we simply we really rely on this RSC community as well to support us and ensure that we have industries that can also support permanent jobs and seasonal jobs for New Zealanders. So I think it goes hand in hand. There's certainly many employers out there who've been really vocal about the fact that they are under extreme pressure. It's been stressful and hard. And so I'm sure this news will be really welcome.
Do we have a cap on the number of RSC workers who will be able to come in?
Yep, so it's capped at 14,400, and you would have heard from Minister Whawhai, we think it's around about 7,000 RSC workers in the country at the moment, and a number of those have been here almost since March last year, so they need to get home. It's important for them and their communities and their families that they can return home safely. So while we're working in getting back up towards that cap, we also need to ensure that we get current RSC workers in the country home. So that's a kind of hand-in-hand process.
Have you been hearing anything about the... we keep looking at the impact on New Zealand of not having enough RSC workers, which is important for the industry, but I'm thinking that the impact on those who haven't been able to come and the impact financially on their families must have been really punishing.
Yep, so the RSC scheme's been around for a long time, and there's been some really important relationships built up between New Zealand and those countries and those communities where the RSC workers have been coming from. So we know that it's been difficult as well in the Pacific. Of course, they don't have tourism at the moment, and this is another really important part of their regional economy that they haven't been able to access. So I'm sure that this will be welcome news in the Pacific as well. And we're really pleased that we can support Pacific nations in this way.
Kate, you mentioned before that, of course, you know, in the last year there's been a lot of effort, not always successfully, in getting more New Zealanders out there picking and pruning and helping out, and that certainly New Zealanders were insisting on rather better pay and conditions. So will the RSC workers coming in now, can they look forward to better pay and conditions?
Well, the minimum requirement is a living wage, $22.10 an hour, but, you know, many of these workers receive more than that. So there are some really important conditions around for employers to be able to have RSC workers in their businesses. They must meet requirements that are set, again, by government. So we believe that, you know, the living wage is really important for in terms of ensuring that we support the economy in that way. And that's also on in terms of employing New Zealanders, of course, wages are really important there too. So, that's something that we as an industry are really looking at improving.
And you're going to have to, I guess, share the number of RSC workers who'll be available, those coming in and those deciding to stay, to make sure that it's equitable. I'm imagining that nobody's perhaps going to have, or very few, will have the numbers of these seasonal workers that they had pre-COVID.
So we'll be going back to, as a group, back to the RSC employer community soon with details around how the numbers of the RSC workers that are coming into the country can be allocated. And you're right, I don't think any employer would have the number of workers that they had pre-COVID, but we are in a different time now. So the great news is that we know that the numbers are going to lift, and will relieve some of that pressure.
Thanks, Kate. Listen, and if you would like to bring James Dicey in here. Good morning, James.
Good morning.
As we've been talking with Kate, a little bit short on detail at the moment, the announcement just made yesterday, but how confident are you that this is going to come together in a meaningful way?
Very confident. We've had experience with bringing the men into the country previously. And it's just some logistical issues as we go through the transition of when the process starts. I've just been having a coffee with a couple of other growers, and they're bringing men in now, and they'll be arriving in the country very shortly. And that flight of 150 men is going to cost something in the order of $900,000 worth of MRQ fees. So they're looking at that, and they're looking out 2 or 3 weeks or 4 weeks and saying, crikey, can't we delay this a little bit and avoid $900,000 of unnecessary costs, free those 150 spaces up in MIQ for other people who desperately need them, and achieve everything that we need. And so it's a win-win for everybody.
Well, that makes sense. That doesn't necessarily mean it's possible. Is it going to happen?
Look, I hope so. I understand from HortiNZ, Summer Fruit, New Zealand Wine Growers, that there are discussions at the moment, and the devil is always in the detail with this sort of stuff. So I'm hoping that the government can see sense with this and create the pathways into the countries where we can, into New Zealand, where we can avoid having to put them in MIQ. It'll free up a whole lot of spaces. And we've been very grateful for the ability to have them go through MIQ, but it comes at a significant cost. I've just spent $100,000 about on Friday. To get guys in coming in the beginning of September. I wish I didn't have to spend that money, but if it is what it is, then the guys are that valuable to me, then I won't begrudge them and won't begrudge the government the need for this. I understand we're at difficult times at the moment and everyone's got to pull their weight.
When would be the optimal time to get workers in specifically, let's look at, for vineyard work?
For us in Central Otago, which is where I'm based, Labor Day, 23rd of October, is traditionally the date that we bring the guys in. I've been doing this for longer than actually the RSE program has been, you know, as part of the original World Bank trial way back in 2006. We know sort of the rhythm of work that we've got, and that's the optimal time for us. It means that they're here right through our peak summer period. I actually share them with people from Summer Fruit New Zealand, so I have a partnership with a local cherry grower. Some of my RSE guys go there to help them with their peak harvest. They're here for my harvest, they're here to take the nets off, and then they go back home again. And that works really well. They're different rhythms for different industries. So the wine industry in Blenheim, they need their guys mostly in winter for the winter pruning. So if we can get to some sense of normalcy again, it will make a huge difference to growers' confidence, not only with investing back into their businesses in New Zealand, but also employing additional New Zealanders in higher paid positions as well.
Yes, well, I wondered about that, if you're going to have enough New Zealanders, because you're not going to have those holidaymakers and backpackers who are also important to the industry. But you know, there are a lot of reservations, complaints even, from New Zealanders saying, you know, this is blimmin' hard work and we're not being paid well enough. So are you going to be able to retain enough New Zealanders to work also?
I had a conversation with one of my guys yesterday. I pay him above the living wage. He's been with me for 15 years. He was just reminding me of his anniversary. You know, it's the whole package. It's the money. It's the benefits that we offer our staff. It's the transport allowances. It's the respect that we give the staff, the variation in the work. So there's a whole package of things. Money is certainly a very important part of it. And with the RSE scheme and MIQ and the requirements that the government's had with the living wage of $22.10 has been the baseline for people with 3 years of experience, all my organisations has had to lift beyond any minimum wage requirements up as well. Frankly, most of the Kiwis that I employ are at much higher rates than that. They're skilled workers, irrigation technicians, tractor drivers, trellis maintenance specialists, etc. All of those guys get paid considerably more than the minimum wage and considerably more than the living wage. And what the RSE scheme really allows me to do is to work with the Pacific Islanders to use them for some of the grunt work, and then use the skilled and specialist work for the Kiwis. And I've employed a lot of Kiwis over the years that I've trained and developed up into those higher roles so that they can achieve higher pay rates. And having the RSE workers gives me the confidence to employ Kiwis and continue to train and develop them as well.
As a matter of interest, do you get many RSE workers from Fiji your way? Because we're talking about workers from Samoa, Tonga and Vanuatu. Poor Fiji, of course, absolutely hammered at the moment by COVID, so they wouldn't be able to supply workers, even if they could.
I personally don't get Fijians, but one of my compatriots down here does. Those guys are very concerned with what's going back at home. They are desperate to stay in New Zealand with a complete decimation of the tourist industry, and that applies across all the Pacific Islands. They are desperate to stay in New Zealand. A lot of the Vanuatu guys that I've had who've worked for me previously were very disappointed that they made the decision to actually go home. You know, and I understand why they did. I had one situation with a guy who'd been with me for a longer period of time. He had a 10-month-old son he'd actually never seen, so he was desperate to get home, and I totally understand and support that. So there's a real face to what we deal with at the moment, but a lot of the guys get pressure to stay in the country because it's their only source of income. It's relatively easy to subsist in a lot of the Pacific Islands, but to actually get ahead and invest in education, invest in buildings, for houses, for vehicles, for businesses, really the only source of opportunity that these men have is to sell their labour overseas, which is a wonderful opportunity for them, and I've seen the effects of that in the islands where I get my guys from. But there's a real humanitarian cost to this as well, and we have to be cognizant of that as well.
Is there any consideration of bringing in charter planes to bring in the workers?
Oh, we do already. So the 150 men that are coming are coming on a charter plane. It's not cheap, and there's a few planes available at the moment, which is, I guess, one of the only upsides of this. But at the moment, there aren't tourist flights to Vanuatu or Tonga or Samoa, so it is all charter flights. And hopefully there's going to be some flexibility with the airlines that if we need to shuffle dates around to free those MIQ spots up a little bit more rapidly than we're able to do that.
Thank you very much, James. James Dicey, Otago-based viticulturalist and director of Grape Vision, and I was also speaking to Kate Hellstrom from Summerfruit NZ.